Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Steph, and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. I'm going to get stuck straight in as I need to leg it to pick up my youngest two from school, so you don't need a big preamble from me. But my guest this week is Zara Arshad, a psychotherapist who specialises in working with couples who are new parents. And honestly, I had no idea that relationships could be so impacted by having a baby until I got there. I've documented this in blog posts that I wrote years ago. I've linked to a couple in the notes to this episode, and I hope it's not too eggy, but I read a bit from a blog post I wrote called The Post Baby Fog, because one of the questions that came up a lot when we said we were recording this is, how do I explain to my partner how I feel after having a baby? And when I went back and read it, it really reminded me what it was like. So yeah, excuse that, but there's loads in here from Zara that I wish I'd heard when I was pregnant and my kids were small, about how to prepare before a baby arrives, how to manage expectations, what's really happening when you feel angry and resentful at your partner. That rage I felt was huge. And Zara also has a book coming soon, which is called Stronger Together, A Couple's Guide to Navigating Your Relationship After Baby. So we'll make sure we shout about that when it's out. This is the third and last episode in this series about relationships. However, our most popular conversations have been when we've talked about relationships and sex, and I get so many messages about those episodes, so we'll definitely bring you more of it. If you haven't listened to them, the episodes that are kind of most closely linked would be Matt Frey's episode, Karen Gurney, aka The Sex Doctor, Laura Danger, Samantha Baines, and Aileen Barrett. They're the most relationshipy episodes. Although, to be honest, it comes up in most of the conversations I have. I just find it so interesting and think the way we're trying to live now really conflicts with lots of our expectations of marriage and being a parent. So we're just trying to work it out. This episode is sponsored by Hudson Rose, who are an amazing mortgage and insurance brokerage with a brilliant team who actually want to help their customers. More on them later in this episode, as if you're due a remortgage and think you're totally stuck, Hudson Rose say they can help and they want to hear from you. Zara and I kicked off with talking about the unexpected vulnerability in your relationship when you have a baby. I've said this before, but I think when I got married, I thought it was like just an upwards trajectory where it just grows and grows and it gets better, and it doesn't. It goes up and down.
Oh, it's like a squiggle all over the graph before eventually, if you can stick out through the squiggle, then maybe you see the upward.
Yeah. And when you're in that, and when you're so vulnerable because you've just had a baby, it's almost like that was your stability, maybe your relationship, if you were in a good place. And so when that's gone as well as everything else, it hits so hard. What are the biggest issues that you see most with the couples that are coming to you after having a baby?
Yeah. So, you know, adjusting to the new normal. It doesn't matter how much you talk to a couple about what it's like to have a baby. You actually have to experience it to know what it's like, you know?
Yeah.
And again, like I said, couples are not even nearly as prepared as they should be. And their relationship is not nearly as prepared as it should be before bringing their baby home.
Well, I saw one of your posts where you said you've got the cot and the diapers and all this long list of stuff that you can find millions of places over the internet where people have suggested lists of what you need. And nowhere in there is there anything about preparing your relationship
nowhere.
For when the baby comes. No.
You don't even think that that's something you need to prepare because... No. No one even really talks about that, right?
No.
So I think it's a huge adjustment. That in itself is such, you know, a difficult thing to get through. And like I said, adjusting to suddenly overnight these new roles. You went from husband and wife or partners to parents and co-parents. If you're new parents, you've never been parents or co-parents before. Mm-hmm. So it's now learning something very new about your relationship and your partner, and figuring out how to cope with these differences or similarities or what it might be. I think there could be a lot of unmanaged and unspoken expectations or assumptions. And so when they're not met, I feel like that becomes an issue. Division of labor is a pretty big one.
So the previous podcast to your one is Laura Danger, who is That Darn Chat on TikTok and Instagram. And she works with Eve Rodsky and the Fair Play Method and stuff. So we get really into that division of labor. Yeah. But that is massive, because prior to having kids, it didn't matter because there wasn't that much. It didn't feel like there was that much to do. Yeah. I probably slipped into more of a maternal role, and he slipped into more traditional, like, man role. And then you had children and you just went, no, this is awful. Yeah. Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is a big one.
Big, big one. And then moms often are, you know, kind of the more involved, the primary parents. So I feel like moms often feel, you know, talking about a heterosexual relationship, they feel like they carry the burden of being the primary parent. So I feel like feeling unsupported. So that creates feelings of resentment and things like that. So I think those are the big things that come up in those first few weeks or months postpartum. But really then what really unfortunately takes a hit is the communication. Because when all these issues start arising, then you start developing maladaptive behaviors in your communication, you know, and maladaptive behaviors are anything that prevent your ability to adjust and adapt to circumstances. So it could be, you know, distancing, avoidance, aggression, passive aggression, you know, blaming, defensiveness, avoidance.
These all sound very familiar.
Yeah. So then we enter into that. So now we've got this problem, let's say has to do with division of labor. Now we're not communicating about it in an effective way.
No.
And so not only is this problem not resolved, now you're also left feeling worse, because now you're left feeling hurt or angry because you couldn't even talk about it.
You're really, really tired. I think that's a really important factor to remember in all of this. You are both really, really tired. And I think it's probably shouldn't be underestimated. Like, one of the things I thought would be quite helpful is to think about how could we explain to a partner how that the mum or the you know, the person that's having the baby might feel when the baby arrives. Because I think one of the things that I get from talking to men and my husband and stuff is like, I just wasn't expecting her to be like that.
It's the invisible load that mums tend to carry, right? It's stuff that does not get seen. You know, dads are often, you see them doing the physical work, you know, the changing the diaper, the helping with the bath, the helping to put the baby to bed or dropping them off to school or whatever that could be. But then you've got the invisible load, the planning the birthday party, the making sure you have the winter jacket ordered in time for the season, you know, the fact that this grocery item is running out and needs to get on the list. You know, the fact that we got to do the laundry because all the socks are dirty, so we needs to be ready for school tomorrow. It's just so many things that are just in our head that doesn't really get seen. Therefore, it's not really appreciated.
And do you think there's a difference as well with the emotional, I suppose, the emotional response that a mum feels? Like, I had no idea that my mood would be so determined by whether the baby had slept, whether they'd fed well, whether they'd looked happy, whether they, like, I just remember one of my kids didn't smile for like 11 weeks, which is really mean. I was like, come on. And I was so tired. And all the friends who'd had babies at the same time, their babies are like beaming at 6 weeks. And I genuinely thought, well, I've screwed this up. He's miserable. I must have got it wrong. And he just was holding out. And he's a very lovely kid. But I felt that. And it's not even logical. Do you see a difference in how different genders respond to that?
So my theory on that is, look at how boys and girls are socialized from a very, very young age. Our generation, when we were kids, as boys and girls, how were we raised? You know, boys don't cry. Boys don't get to have emotions. Or boys' emotions are dismissed or viewed as bad or viewed as weak. Girls get nurturing. You can cry. We're going to respond softly and gently to you. And girls are expected to be helpers and caretakers and attuning to other people's needs. So girls from a very, very young age are socialized to be more attuned to emotions, to their own emotions, to other people's emotions. They're more in the caretaker role, the helper role, the nurturer role. And boys are not. You know, boys are, you're supposed to be tough and play sports and, you know, appear strong and be the protector of your little sister. You know, that's how boys are raised. So is it such a big surprise that these boys grow into men not attuning to not only their own emotions or feelings, but to their partners or to their babies?
So I suppose the feeling of isolation is that when you are looking at them and going, I'm finding this really hard, they don't know how to respond to that because they don't have that, maybe that empathy or that emotional understanding. Or like, I remember my husband saying when he realized, and this is probably after our second kid and like into like a year or so after our second kid, him saying like, I was responding to you like you were Steph pre-kids when you were very hormonal, very tired, very emotional and going through this massive change. So if I said something unreasonable or mean, he'd respond like when I was logical. Yeah. And what I needed him to do was just be so kind to me. And I remember saying, like, just be kind, and him kind of looking at me, because he wasn't being unkind, but I just needed like so much to know that he was in my team and didn't think I was mad and all that stuff. And we've struggled with that for ages when the kids were small.
Yeah, I think it's just we really have done a disservice to how, or at least, you know, how boys and girls have been raised. And I think I see those differences very clearly when these couples, and I work with heterosexual couples for the most part, so I'm going to refer to them. You see it. You see the male is, you know, usually the one, the avoidantly attached partner. The woman is more the anxiously attached partner. And you see these like common characteristics that show up where one is less attuned or less clueless to emotions or can't even name their emotions, and the other is more attuned. And then it comes down to, well, she happens to be the woman and he happens to be the man. Is it a coincidence that this is what I keep noticing? You know,
I found something I wrote, so I was going to read it out. I wrote this when my kids were 3 and 1, so I was writing about the fog, because I think most women experience some sort of fog. So it might be postnatal depression, or it might be like a bluesy period where they're just, but I feel like that first year, and I've got three people I know who are just, their kids have just turned one, and they're all coming out, and you can see it, you can see the fog lifting, and they didn't even necessarily know they were in it. But so I was just going to read this. It was called the post baby fog. And it was just a bit of it. It said, the best way I can describe how I felt in the months after both of my babies arrived was that I was in a fog. Sometimes it was thick and dark and I felt incredibly sad. Other times angry, mostly with my husband. A lot of the time I just felt like what should have been my happy times were in some way suppressed. I couldn't let go and relax. A constant feeling of anxiety that there was something that needed doing. That total responsibility for another being felt huge, and my striving to do it brilliantly and to get it right meant I put myself under massive pressure. This often led to the angry exchanges with my husband. He didn't feel that anxiety so overwhelming and personal, and as far as he could see, for the most part, we had happy, healthy babies, so I should just chill out. I also felt lost and lonely. All the things that give me identity, my job, my friendships, my body and my marriage, were not as they were, and it felt that they never could be. Some women might feel I found their role in life and are more fulfilled. I don't think I'm alone in saying I certainly didn't feel like this in those first months. A friend that recently had a baby texted me, I feel up and down and generally a sort of shadow of my former self, as all I'm doing is caring for others and have sort of forgotten what I'm actually like or what I do. That sounds ridiculous, but I can't explain it very well. I think she actually explains it perfectly. For this period, it can feel like everything that previously made you feel good about yourself or just feel yourself is absent.
That's
how I remember it. What I remember. And I'd forgotten, because my oldest is 11 now, and I was reading that, I was like, oh, it was so lonely. It's really strange how you forget.
It's very lonely. I remember loneliness was definitely one of those feelings that was common in both my postpartum experiences.
Yeah. So how could you prepare a couple or a partner of how these feelings that might happen beforehand? Because you do talk about kind of the preparation piece. How do you communicate that?
Yeah. I think, you know, talking about your expectations with each other and how you're expecting to show up as a mother, as a co-parent, and as a partner, and how you're expecting your partner to show up as a father, as a parent, as a co-parent. And really, what would that look like? You know, what are you imagining how you guys would be supporting each other and being there for each other. I mean, imagine your day right now from start to finish, like who does what, who takes out the garbage, who cooks, who does the grocery, who does the cleaning, who goes to work at this time, who wakes up late, who wakes up early, all that, like really go through your day and then plug a baby in it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very different day. And you can't even anticipate that if this is your first baby, because you don't even know how drastically different it's going to look, and your nights, how drastically different they will look. But at least start opening up those conversations. Start talking about your concerns. Like, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about doing night shifts. Like, I don't know how that's going to go. I just don't think I'm going to function too well, sleep deprived. And, you know, I'm hoping that that's something we can like split up, so it's not always me. You know, so start communicating that expectation from before, like, hey, like, I'm not planning on being the only one who's going to wake up every night. Or you might decide in your relationship that you're okay with that role. That was me. My husband was the one who was working. I was the one who was on mat leave. I also know I function better with less sleep. He functions a little bit less better with, you know, not enough sleep. So I just felt like, you know, I think it's fair if I wake up at night and I do the night shift. He has to clock in to work. He has to be fresh. He has to be alert. He has to do that job. He has to earn the paycheck. You know, that's his, you know. But then I just had the expectation, you know, like, hey, in the morning, though, I need like a little snooze. So can you take over the baby early? Or during the day, when you come back from work, you know, I'm hoping that you're going to support me when you walk in the door. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those sort of expectations, I was well prepared to communicate for my second baby, because the first one, I didn't know to talk about that. The second one,
really,
I did.
That's what's really hard with all of this, isn't it? You can have the conversations before, but until that baby arrives. And also, if you really understood what it was going to feel like, people maybe wouldn't have babies. Like if someone explains it in too much detail.
It would be the biggest contraceptive. Like who would want to have a baby then, right?
Yeah.
Also, if you're struggling with something before the baby has arrived, you might want to work on it from now. Because whatever you're struggling with right now, it's not getting better. It's only going to get worse. And so that would be another way to prepare your relationship.
If you're already bitching about who did the cooking and who did this, like, okay, that's
how do you think that's going to go down when the baby arrives?
That's probably an easier thing to put in place than have a conversation about your expectations. Almost, if there's anything that you're already struggling with a bit, what looking at that, because that you can deal with.
Yeah, if you're already, let's say, feeling resentment about something.
Yes.
Because of whatever's happening in your relationship, I promise you that resentment is not going to go away after the baby arrives. It's actually going to get much worse.
On that, so when I asked on Instagram about what was the thing that was most difficult, or what did you feel the most after having a baby in your relationship? And overwhelmingly, it was anger and resentment. So I had people saying things like, this is Caroline said, how much I hated my husband both times. I had Hannah say how much I resented my husband for sleeping, going to work, not thinking about the baby 24/7. I had someone else say that you can come back from what feels like true hatred. The rage is real but temporary, which I thought was a bit more promising. But yeah, just so many people just going, I was absolutely angry. I was fuming. The rage I felt. And I wrote about that as well. And that was kind of one of the most popular things I ever wrote. Again, because maybe women aren't supposed to be angry and mums certainly aren't supposed to be angry. But actually, that is how everyone's feeling. So what is it? Where does the anger come from? I'm sure there's loads of reasons, but what would you say as an expert?
Anytime you feel anger, that should be your red flag that something is happening that's making you respond angrily. So the way I describe anger is it's a secondary emotion. It's the surface level emotion. It's the emotion, for some reason, is easier for us to show and express and let out. But then underneath the anger, there's a underlying emotion. There's a primary emotion. There's something softer, more vulnerable, something that's hurting. And so in session with couples, right, whenever you ask the feeling questions, I'm annoyed, I'm frustrated, I'm angry. Those are the ones that come out. Those are the easy ones to just spit out because that's what you feel. But it's getting attuned to, okay, if I'm feeling angry, annoyed, frustrated, that means really I'm feeling something else inside. What is my anger in response to? Something is happening. I'm feeling a way about it inside, and it's coming out in the form of anger. And the thing is, because we're not attuned to that, we communicate with anger. guess what happens when we communicate with anger? The other person doesn't receive it well. Mm. So what we want to do, or what I would recommend for new parents or couples or parents even with more children to do, is dig deeper and try to understand what's lying underneath the anger. Tap into that, because it's going to be something more vulnerable. It's going to be something more accurate and clear. And often when you tap into the depth of what it is, what's making you angry, you realize that there's unmet needs. Resentment is a sign of unmet needs. You always want to, start talking to yourself. We talk to ourselves anyway all the time. It's not anything that crazy. Literally, there's always a voice chatting in our head. Yeah. But really consciously talk to yourself when you're feeling angry. Why am I feeling so angry right now? Okay, because, my husband's been sleeping in every day and I'm feeling exhausted. Why am I feeling exhausted? Because I'm waking up with a baby every morning and I'm just feeling really tired. And okay, and how is that landing on me? Well, it's making me feel resentful and like lonely, like I'm doing this all by myself. Mm. Okay, so in response to feeling lonely and resentful, you're feeling angry. And when you communicate with anger, it doesn't, for most people, it just does not land well, right? People get defensive.
Defensive. That's exactly it, because actually you're saying you're a shit person to somebody who you love, who previously you loved, and they're trying probably in some cases.
Mm-hmm. And I always recommend change all your yous to I's. Anytime you talk about the other person, they will have the urge to defend because you're talking about them, right? Nobody wants to be blamed for anything. Nobody likes that feeling. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about yourself, you've taken away any ammunition that your partner might have to argue or debate with you. How can somebody do that if you're saying, well, I'm feeling exhausted, you know?
Yeah.
But you're sleeping in every morning is like an attacking, blaming language, you know? Yeah. Like, I'm sick of it. You sleep in every morning. It just pisses me off. That's one way of saying it.
And also, if they love you and you're saying, I'm lonely, which actually is you weren't here when I needed you or whatever. But if it turns into I'm lonely, hopefully then they will build on that empathy, right? And that care and that, oh, I don't want you to feel like that. God, I just remember screaming in a way that I never have screamed before or since, like that.
Oh my gosh, the rages.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am not an angry or rageful person at all. I don't relate to that way of communicating. And I think there's two or three times I had literally, like, I was like possessed. I wasn't myself. And I look back and I was like, oh my God, who is this person? This is not me. And I was so disappointed and like just feeling like gross.
And no one wants to be that person either, do you? Like, if it's like, oh, she's an old nag, no one wants to be that.
Yeah.
What have you found from your experiences the most common feeling that is under that anger?
So for new parents and even parents who have like a toddler and a baby type of phase, resentment is a big one. Lonely, feeling unappreciated and feeling unsupported.
Okay.
So resentment, lonely, unappreciated, unsupported, I would say are the very like base. When you keep digging, you land at those few. I find most commonly. And so just cue into the fact that you're feeling angry. That means that is not the time to talk about it. Go regulate yourself. And that's a whole different topic. And it's so important for us to teach our kids how to regulate, you know, regulate yourself, talk to yourself, figure out what is actually underneath your anger, get to that vulnerable, softer place. Now, not all relationships also are safe to communicate vulnerably. If you find your relationship is not that, you know, there's abusive relationships, for example. So maybe you want to turn to a professional. Maybe that's the time to go to couples therapy or individual therapy. So you're doing it with a professional present, you know. But if you find that your relationship is safe enough to tap into those vulnerable emotions and communicate with your partner, like, you know, gosh, I'm just feeling really, really like exhausted and lonely. You know, I think I need a break from waking up in the mornings. Do you think you could take over this weekend? Now, you still communicated your need. You still let them know that you're expecting them to step up and they need to stop sleeping in. But you did it in a way where you're not blaming them, but you're asking for help. So you're a piece of shit. You sleep in every morning. You don't care about helping me. This is so unfair versus, you know, gosh, I'm just feeling really, really exhausted and lonely these days. I think I really need a break this weekend. Could you please take over watching the baby in the morning?
It's so different.
It's so different. Now, I know people would be like, all right, well, that's unrealistic. Who talks like that when you're that angry? But that's the point. You don't want to talk when you're angry.
No, because you say the worst things. It's that 3 a.m. when you're just livid. I can remember my body just sort of shaking with rage.
Oh my gosh, I remember I threw literally a pillow at my husband once.
Oh, pillow's not so bad.
But I was so angry because my newborn is screaming and crying at the top of his lungs in my arms while my husband's 2 feet right there, same exact room, on the bed, passed out, snoring. I was so angry because no amount of calling out to him got his attention. I took a pillow and I just like whacked him to wake him up.
Yeah. And you feel alien because you're like, I would never do that. I would never lash out physically. I would never. And I know I do. I know I threw stuff. You feel so out of control.
This episode is sponsored by the brilliant boutique mortgage and insurance broker, Hudson Rose. They're a bit different to your usual, some might say stuffy, mortgage brokers. They're a lovely, passionate team who put the customer at the heart of everything they're doing. If you have a mortgage up for renewal in the next 6 months, you may be feeling a sense of panic with everything going on in the news. Hudson Rose want you to give them a call. You can have a virtual cup of tea together or go into one of their branches if you're in Gloucestershire and chat it all through. They've said you do have options and they are here to help. They will donate £50 to your local food bank if you say don't buy her flowers when you contact them. And their website is hudson-rose.co.uk. There are links in the notes of this episode to their website and Instagram.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What you're saying about communicating and or finding therapy, but I think the other thing I found was friends, but friends who you really trust, who really know you, who know your partner maybe sometimes is helpful if they'd like your partner, because then they're not just going, yeah, he's a shit. Because what you actually need, I had a friend and we would go for a run and we both had small kids and we'd start by being quite angry and talking about what dickheads our husbands were. And then we'd end up laughing about something totally irrational or crackers that one of us had done. I remember her saying that her husband was on the toilet having a shit and she's banging on the door like, how long are you going to be in there? And we were like, what has become of us? Like, I couldn't even just let him go to the toilet. But and then it's funny. And then it takes off that really scary bit where you're going, oh, my God, I feel actually mental and I don't know if we're going to survive.
And you realize you're not alone and you're not the only one with a husband who disappears for 30 minutes in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah.
While you can't even go for like 2 seconds without the kids banging.
You have
on
a kid
door.
On your lap. You're feeding whilst doing it.
Oh my gosh, like, yes. They're with you in the bathroom.
Yeah, But I think that that does soften it a bit. Having somebody sharing it with could work as well as therapy. Like, they might not be able to give the most amazing advice, but I think that.
But definitely choosing that person wisely, though. Like you said, you don't want to choose the person who's going to feed into, you know, those negative feelings that you're already feeling. Yeah, you don't want to be somebody who's also feeding into the toxic positivity aspect. You want someone who can validate you and who provides you that comfort and reassurance, but also respects that this person is your partner and they don't get to bash them or further make you dislike this person. So don't talk to the family member who probably has issues with your husband or your partner.
Get out of there quick.
And, you know, just one more thing, because it's not realistic to say that you're going to always be perfectly emotionally regulated and communicating well, like that's not realistic. Your window of tolerance is very, very low when you're sleep deprived and your basic physiological needs are not being met. Most of us are not going to function very well, right? So in terms of really making sure your physiological needs are taken care of, however that might look like for you. But because it's normal to get angry, it's normal to lash out, it's normal to say things that you know you could have said better, but you said it in the moment. Mm-hmm. But the really, 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 really big thing is go back and make that repair. That is going to have a bigger impact than what happened when you were angry. Mm. So don't let an angry exchange be the end of that discussion. Like, try to go back and make that repair, whether it's later that night or the next day, and say, you know what, that was not the best delivery. I could have said that in a nicer way and should not have thrown the pillow at you. You know, like, just you can go ahead and be human about it and just say, you know what, that was not the nicest way I said that, or not the nicest way I handled that situation. What I really meant to say was X, Y, and Z.
Because you talk about the negative cycle. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at, right? If you keep meeting each other with, and you did this and you did this and I'm so angry. Yeah. Like, it just is so sad because you're just.
Yeah. It's so like, again, if one partner is communicating in that like maladaptive way and the other partner just meets it also with, you know, a maladaptive behavior, it's not going to help. You're stuck in that negative loop and then you're not getting out of it, right? So it's even like parents with kids, you know, like when kids are dysregulated or they're throwing a tantrum or they're just crying uncontrollably or screaming or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. If you escalate and become angry and yell at them, hopefully, I'm hoping listeners have realized that that actually escalates their child's behavior further. You actually want to meet their tantrum or yelling or screaming with connection and compassion, because that's actually what brings their tantrums or anger or dysregulation down, right? We're adults, but emotionally, it's a pretty similar relationship, parent-child and partner-partner. That emotional safety and that emotional connection, you know, that is built through compassion and respect and kindness. So if one of you is dysregulated and struggling, hopefully the other partner is able to maintain a level of regulation and not respond the same way, not, you know, respond the opposite of that.
Another kind of common thread that I had from people, and you mentioned it, of what were the things that were underneath that anger, was people saying that about feeling disappointed with how their partner was behaving or what they were not doing after the baby arrived. So I had some comments from Donna who said, what if one person won't do the boring task, doesn't care if nappies and toilet roll, etc., run out? And also, his life didn't change, which I think is a really big one. Someone at Jenny said how much it went a bit 1950s. Ellen said, my husband didn't change in the way I thought he would when he became a dad.
And which is an expectation.
Yeah.
That I'm going to assume was not communicated ahead of time.
Yeah. Like, I can imagine, because we had, I think I was 29 when we had kids. I think I probably expected Doug to not want to go out as much and to, you know, not want to drink if he was out, or like kind of suddenly become dad sensible. And obviously that wasn't going to happen overnight. And I think, do you think, like, with women, we have this whole process of being pregnant and our body changing that gets us to that place, maybe, whereas a man doesn't. So, or someone who doesn't have the baby doesn't. So they suddenly, there's a baby there, but they haven't had that process of nurturing yourself and knowing it's there.
Yeah. I'm not sure what happens there, but again, societally and culturally, and again, think about how boys and girls are raised. girls are just raised to be more nurturing, more helpful, more caretaking.
But I think if you heap society stuff on it as well, which isn't just from within your home, that is from everywhere.
Yeah.
That also plays a massive part.
So then you've got all that messaging too, right? Like what moms are expected to be. And it's the moms are expected to be loving and nurturing and caretaking and at home, you know, with the baby, the one who takes the leave to be home with the baby and all that. And some of that is natural. It has to happen. We're the ones who are breastfeeding. It is the way that it is, you know.
Well, guilt comes up a lot with women as well. And I think that's really complicated because, again, it probably sometimes that comes out as anger because you feel guilty and then you're resentful about feeling guilty. But some of that guilt is not from anything your partner's doing. It's because you feel like you should be this super mum who can do all the things and juggle all the stuff and does the feeding and does the, I don't know, like the majority of the care.
That's expectation of yourself. So in the book that I'm writing, Stronger Together, A Couple's Guide for Navigating Your Relationship After Baby, there is a whole section that I have under self-care that talks about unconscious mental images that we have in our mind of motherhood. And because they're unconscious, we don't realize that we're judging ourselves based on not fitting those images.
Yeah.
That's where the guilt comes from. That's where the shoulds come from. I should be this way. I should be better. I should know what to do in this situation. I should enjoy motherhood more. I should be a happier mother. You know, all those things, they're all expectations that we have for ourselves. But where did they come from? Who told us that? So we have these unconscious mental images that we have in our mind. And without realizing, we're trying to match that image. And because we're not matching it, because realistically we are human and we cannot always match it, we feel guilty. We are self-critical, you know, self-hateful. You beat ourselves down. There's so much beating ourselves down. But when you make the unconscious more conscious, and then you consciously decide that, you know what, I'm not going to subscribe to that unconscious definition of what a mother is. I'm going to create my own definition of how a mother should be. And that's the definition I want to fit. And that definition is flawed. It's human. It's imperfect. And if you can align yourself to that definition, hopefully you do grow and improve and be feel encouraged to be a better mother, better father, without the, and I'm going to beat myself down if anything goes wrong, or if I'm not going to be, if I'm not perfect, or if I scream at my kid.
Because that's a really tough one. Again, I don't think I thought about what kind of mother I wanted to be. And then when it got to it, it all really conflicted because I wanted to be the mum that my mum had been and be around. And but I also wanted to work and I wanted to, I don't know, like there's just so many different
things
going on.
You wanted this whole thing, right? This whole perfect motherhood who can like be there and be attuned and be home with the kids. And like you said, you never thought about it, yet look, you had images in your mind.
Well, and you and your partner probably have those images for what you think each other's going to be like, what exactly. He'll be like as the dad. Well, as we've just
you
said.
You had one for your husband. You
yeah,
had images
and he would have had
husband.
One for me. And I don't know how I've lived up to that. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's and then we feel disappointed and guilty self-critical when we're not meeting those images. But so, who placed those? Who told you about those images? Where are those images coming from?
And sometimes it feels like it would be easier if things were still, one of the people said, I didn't know how much it was going to feel like the 1950s. In some ways, it feels like that because there were more defined roles.
Yeah.
The other thing that lots of people mentioned was sex. And a lot of them said they completely went off it. No interest. My interest has completely disappeared. My need for personal space went from being very tactile to not. That was Martina. And then someone else just said, is it okay not to have sex for a long time? That was Hillary. That is a massive change. When you're tired and everything's leaking, it's just not a sexy time.
Yeah, it's not at all, especially not for the moms. No. Yeah, that's one of those things you just want to manage your expectations around. It's totally normal that your sex life will take a hit. Not for everyone, and maybe for some because of hormones, it goes the other way. But I think it's a very, very common one that sex and intimacy definitely declines. And that is not surprise when you're sleep deprived, exhausted, caring for a baby all day, definitely not feeling sexy in your postpartum body. No. Yeah, you're not wanting to have sex. That desire is not there.
We had Karen Gurney, who's the sex doctor, is her mm-hmm. handle, and she was brilliant. So she did an episode, and it was all about desire and desire in long-term relationships. But she pulled out some stats about how, sex goes down, the amount of sex you're having dramatically goes down in the first 5 years of having kids, but also that couples who communicate better and have a better division mm-hmm. of labour have more sex. So they're just all things to think about. But I think when you list all the reasons why you might not want to have sex, there's quite a few. But also if you go back to your expectations of what might happen after you have had a baby, mm-hmm. I don't think we had a conversation about it, that there might be a period that you just don't want to do it. And even just having that conversation that like, oh, did you know that quite often people don't do it for however many months or, you know.
And like I said earlier, and how you just mentioned that thing about communication, you've got that issue, right? Like less or low desire for sex. But then now there's a bigger issue at play because you don't even know how to communicate about it now, right? You've got this issue and now this issue feels much worse mm-hmm. because you don't know how to talk about it. We don't have mm-hmm. communication tools to talk. It's just like, I just wish there's like a mental health class that's offered from like elementary school that talks about things like emotional regulation, communication, you know, how to advocate for yourself, how to communicate your needs respectfully. I wish that was taught from a young age to kids so we could grow up into adults who had these tools. You know, I teach adults in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s how to communicate. Mm-hmm. It's just so insane if you really think about it. Like, how are we not taught this? Going back again to my earlier point is if there is already a struggle, let's say in your communication pre-baby, mm-hmm. you might mm-hmm. want to work on it from now. Because mm-hmm. whatever patterns that you have, let's say if it's like one tends to be more angry and the other tends to be more avoidant type, they're actually going to get exacerbated after baby. Mm-hmm. So they're going to either become worse or deepened or whatever that is. They're definitely not getting better. It's not like suddenly after baby, you're going to just turn to each other and start communicating vulnerably. You want to get into the habit and practice and learn those tools and skills from now, be mm-hmm. it sex, be it any other topic, division of labor, whatever that is. Because when you can't talk about it, it damages the connection. When it damages the emotional connection between two people, that safety and security that two people feel together, you're not going to want to physically connect. No. Desire is definitely not going to spike up if you're feeling emotionally disconnected.
Well, and particularly, I think, for women, like, he might still be up for it, but you're not
exactly.
going to be.
there again is that biological difference, right? Like mm-hmm. men operate differently. Exactly. Like women kind of need that for most, a lot of women, emotional connection as is an important piece, almost like a precursor to physical connection.
As a final question, if there was one thing, I think rather than pre the baby arriving, so we're talking to a couple, they're in those first months and they just feel completely disconnected, what would be the kind of one thing that you would say that they could do that might start to help?
There is no solution unless you understand the problem. Okay. So number one thing is understanding what's happening. Why are you disconnected? And then if you're realizing, let's say you're disconnected because you feel resentful, because you feel unsupported, because the division of labor is so imbalanced, let's say, how are you going to work on building your connection when that division of labor remains imbalanced? Because mm-hmm. you're going to keep feeling unsupported. You're going to keep feeling resentful. And that is going to inhibit your ability to connect. So I would say actually the number one thing is not like an actionable step I can take you. Like do this exercise and it will build connection. Because mm-hmm. truth is, yeah, surface level in that moment, it might build connection. That connection's not going to last. Because let's say if there is resentment eating inside of you, like building up every day, whatever that exercise you do for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, it's not going to last. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand, what is it that's causing our disconnect? Is it resentment? Is it feeling unsupported or unappreciated? Is it unmet needs? Is it, an unfair division of labor? Is it the mother feeling like she has way too much on her plate and partner doesn't support? What is it that's causing that disconnection? Because there's something that's causing it. Work on that. When you work on that and you resolve that issue respectfully, compassionately, kindly with each other, then you can do the step two. And now here's an exercise you can do to build connection. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Zara for speaking with me and to Hudson Rose for sponsoring this episode. I hope there was something in there that was useful. It might be an episode that's worth sharing with anyone you know who's about to have a baby or who's in those early months having had one. And do message me with any thoughts, either on Instagram or email podcast@don'tbuyherflowers.com. And as I say in each episode, it would be brilliant if you could leave a review and a rating. That would be superb. Our next series is coming in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to be speaking to business owners. So it is nearly 8 years since I started Don't Buy Her Flowers, originally on a spare bedroom floor, packing boxes on my knees. But we do now have a warehouse and a team. It's a bit of a slicker operation. But in case you didn't know, we sell thoughtful gifts for lots of occasions. So birthday, get well, bereavement, new parents, any occasion really. And we do gifts for kids and teens and men as well as women. And you essentially put the package together from categories so you can create bespoke gifts that are just right for your recipient. Or we do have some packages that we've kind of created for you if you're not quite sure of what to send somebody. Then we gift wrap it all up and we write your personal message on the tag, and we're really good at it and the team are awesome. So our packages are really all about encouraging the recipient to take a bit of time for themselves. And actually, I should mention, we are taking pre-orders for Christmas. So if you want to tick things off your list or spread out your shopping, you can order now and select pre-order and we'll send it out just before Christmas. So that is a little bit about Don't Buy Her Flowers. And I hope you're okay. It is getting chilly out there. So wrap up warm and take care.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.